Hi, Stefan. Now you are jobless. So DevOx was sold in seconds. Sold out, right? So
well, the conference tickets were sold out, right? The more expensive tickets, which is the 5 days tickets, that takes a bit longer. What happens is that we had like 7,000 views on the registration page, and everybody wants to get the conference tickets. So what they do, bigger companies, they actually coordinate with multiple people to get in. They reserve these tickets, conference combis, and then they coordinate and say, yeah, I got in for conference, so we'll buy the conference tickets. And then the 10 combi tickets that they reserved, they just let it go. And after 25 minutes, they are released. Right? So that's happened. So what you see is like in 3 seconds, the combi and the conference tickets, they're all blocked because there's so many people. Then they coordinate which ones they got. And then they get released after 25 minutes. So the conference tickets, they were all gone and bought. And then some combi tickets still got released, which is good because, you know, I mean, it was just crazy. I mean, we just saw at a certain moment, you know, we had 7,000 views, like clicks on the webpage. So people are very eager to get to the conference days, which is which is good. Yeah.
What is the difference between combi ticket and conference ticket?
So combi is 5 days. So the combi is basically, so we have, so DevOx Belgium is 5 days. The first 2 days are deep dive days, which means we have the topics of talks of 3 hours where people can go in a bit more detail. So that's Monday and Tuesday. They used to be called university days, but then some people thought this was only for students. So we rebranded it to deep dive. And then Wednesday till Friday is the conference days. And then you can buy a ticket for all 5 days, and that's the combi ticket.
Ah, okay, cool. Yeah. So and so there's some combi tickets left, right?
Yes, there's still some left. And what we also do, we have a second smaller batch, the 1st of September. And that's by design because we've had situations where a secretary, with all respect to her secretary, had to buy like tickets for the company. She was unable to get any tickets. And then they're like calling and crying on the line saying like, I'm going to lose my job because I didn't get the tickets. So to avoid these type of dramas, we have a second batch where at least we have a bit of a, how do you call that? Some space to at least help situations.
Ah, this is why you say maybe you get some calls, right? Because we
And we did, right? We always do like for example, in Germany, so we legally have to verify the VAT number. But we are using the European VAT service, and that one delegates it to the different countries. And yesterday at 9 o'clock, Germany and Czechia had a down. It was down for a few seconds for the VAT validation in Germany.
Because of DevOx, right? It was
not because of just because. Well, you know, government services do sometimes go down. But because they have 25 minutes to validate their registration, it was fixed within that 25 minutes. But sometimes they're not that lucky and they're really unable to validate their VAT number. And then they just need to take a screenshot and call us and then we will sort them out. But it's very hectic. I mean, seriously, I really don't sleep very well the day before because I know it's just going to be very hectic. Our registration application Alpha.io needs to scale and I make sure it can handle that big load. But it's fun. I mean, it's a very energy rushed experience.
Yeah. And all the drama just because of Java. So maybe you should offer other conferences which are a bit more quiet, you know, just do some Python and Node.js so they can sweep well. There will be one click, you know, per hour, and you can call someone. It's like, okay, are we five attendees or 10, you know? But
Well, I mean, the economy is slowing down a bit. I mean, we do see that there's like, we have a bit less sponsors compared to last year. So we do see even that we have still a lot of people interested. There is a bit of a slowdown in the economy. I think that's definitely feelable, or we see it. I mean, like even DevOx France had a few less sponsors, but they have 70 companies sponsoring. So they're like, you know, they shouldn't be complaining. They have more than 4,000 attendees. So, but even there, we do see that there is a bit less, or it's slowing down a bit.
Yeah, but you know, the French people complain all the time, right?
Yeah. Well, they either complain or they do protests, right?
Exactly. So this is the be careful, you know. So
it's part of their culture.
So, as long as they not protest, you know, everything is fine in DevOps.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's good. I mean, for me, my excitement is with AI and large language models and so on. And I really push that theme for this year's DevOps. I mean, it's, to be honest, it's like, I'm sure it's the biggest Java AI conference in the world. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced about that because I really pushed in that direction. I even rebranded the tracks where I had the Gen AI, specific Gen AI track. Mm-hmm. I had a built different track, which is like, well, you know, building different tools with AI, etc. And so, like, we have MCP, we have AI agents, we have coding assistants, we have LLMs, local LLMs. Well, I mean, you've done your share as well. And so we've got Java on GPU, of course, with Tornado, but also with Babylon. We have Paul Sandoz talking about what they're doing with Java on GPU. So it's like, I'm really disappointed that I'm the organizer because I would love to go to this conference as an attendee and just mm-hmm. go to all the sessions.
Yeah, I can tell you how it went afterwards, you know, because I would attend, you know, so we can have a session. I can tell you some news about DevOps.
Yeah, but it really is like that because I run around like a headless chicken as an organizer, right, trying mm-hmm. to make sure that everything runs smoothly. But I would love to just go to the sessions, relax and enjoy. And yeah, it's... We've got almost 200 speakers and lots of top content. And no, really, really looking forward to it. And mm-hmm. and thanks for helping out as well, Adam. I mean, you've pointed out a few topics and speakers which I reached out to, and some of them actually committed. So that's really good. So thanks for that collaboration.
Yeah. And what's also interesting is last year at DevOps, we had a chat before the DevOps. And you said, okay, you have to submit an AI topic, which I did. But just for fun, I submitted another one with the snippets.
Yeah.
And this was, I think this is stupid, but maybe I should do this. And it was crazy popular. I got lots of requests. And now it has an own momentum, actually. So people are commenting and there's an entire community about that. And this really stunned me. I never thought that something like this is even interesting for conferences. But it seems like maybe, you know, there's too much Stack Overflow, you know, content mm-hmm. with getters, setters, or whatever. Yeah. And no one actually shows what you can really do with Java if you are more pragmatic. And this was a huge surprise for me. And I think there were like 30,000 views.
On YouTube, it's just crazy. It exploded. It was like, what? So we decided to select that one again because you submitted that one and an LLM-related one. And so we said, like, well, you know, it's clear that there's more interest for that. Yeah. So, yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Congrats.
Yeah. It was a surprise because even in the comment, I sent you a comment last year and say, if too much stuff from me, please kill this one because mm-hmm. this is just stupid, right? And I, it was selected, so thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
You said the economy is going down. I have maybe a little bit different impression. So I think management doesn't understand what LLM really is. And they are thinking that in a few months or at most years, non-coding people in plain English will be able, you know, to create some content. Mm. And this is why we don't need tech conferences anymore because who cares about programming? I think this is the problem. And the other problem is large companies are investing in own LLMs. I would say more or less, I would say seriously. And they are able to generate some code, but the code is terrible. So what I expect, what happens in very soon, or it already happens, is the same situation as Rails, 2006. There will be lots of Vibe coded stuff which no one understands.
Yeah.
And if and we get I already get some requests. Can you help us with this because it was generated by a company and no one knows what's going on here. And this is exactly the situation as 20 years ago.
So I can tell you a practical story. So I decided in July to do a Vibe coding project because I wanted mm-hmm. to really know how far mm-hmm. I could go. Mm-hmm. And I decided to rewrite the DevOps mobile application. because the DevOps mobile application, it was based on VoxRin. It's an open source application, but the person behind it didn't have enough time to add new features, etc. So I said, like, you know what? I'll rewrite it, but just doing vibe coding, and I will select a programming language or a framework which I don't know, which was React. So I said, like, and the limitations for me was that I should not touch the code.
But React is actually a good choice because React is the most popular framework for LLM. So this was actually very reasonable decision, actually.
I fully know. So I was fully aware of that. But the limitations were I will not touch the code. I will only do prompting. And so the first 2 days, it was just amazing. After 2 days, I already had a proof of concept, which looked even better, to be honest, than the original one. I mean, the design, the CSS that it produced, I mean, of course, I looked at the code. It was just beautiful. So I continued with lots of enthusiasm. But it was like a proof of concept where I then went like, I'm using Firebase as the backend. And then it was like, oh, no, I should do internationalization. Oh, I should support multiple events. Is that... So I was refactoring with prompts while doing the project. And after 2 weeks, I had 90% working, which was really beautiful. But there was like this 10% which it was breaking the application. It had, for example, 5 different indirections to get to a service, and I couldn't fix it anymore. And at that moment, after 2 weeks of vibe coding, it was clear to me I needed a React expert to get me out of the spaghetti that it had created. And it was like, it was a bit of a dual feeling. I was happy and sad that it didn't work, but I was happy that it was clear that we still need senior developers to actually guide it and make sure that it, like creating guardrails to make sure that it doesn't go in certain direction and it creates a new, you know, service for everything on top of another service, etc. So I had to actually stop the project because it was not usable. And so I restarted the project then with the experience I had. But now I chose for Angular because I know Angular a bit better. I didn't know React at all. And then I really did like, I used the existing code to create a specification for the new project. So I used an LLM saying, like, look at this code, create a spec for this feature. The spec was in Markdown, and then that Markdown specification was used to build the Angular application. But I was really looking into the code and and really guiding the application and saying, no, you have to create 3 files, create a unit test, create a service class separately. So I was really like playing the technical project lead. And the end result is what I've published on the new web app, basically. So it has replaced the new mobile or the old mobile app. And that was 95% vibe coded. Now in Angular, it's working. But what I definitely learned is that, one, you need to use specifications. That really helps a lot. So you do planning on the spec. And I actually use sometimes 3 different LLMs to review the spec. So I start with Claude Code, so with Opus 4.1. Then I have sometimes GPT review it. And then sometimes I go to DeepSeek to review it. And the end result is a spec which is very clear. Then I let Claude Code. I use the max subscription of $100 a month, which is peanuts, to be honest. And use Claude Code to create the code. And then basically also tell them create unit tests and integration tests and the linter, and so on. So the more testings that you can introduce on integration, unit testing, and the linting, you basically are starting to introduce guardrails, which makes sure that you're not breaking anything, because that sometimes happens. It focuses on one feature, but it breaks another one without knowing it, because it doesn't know the full context. And so that was a very interesting learning experience. And the result is, I'm like a one-person product activity house now, because I don't need a designer. I don't need an Angular expert. I don't need a Firebase expert. I can do with one person. I was able to do in 3 weeks of vibe coding what probably would have taken me 6 months with 3 people, to be honest.
Similar experience here. And I actually submitted a talk about that to DevOps, and this is accepted or half accepted.
But yeah, it's in backup.
But it's really hard to find a good title for it. I will explain what I actually did, and actually also have a workshop in December, but also I'm not happy with the title. But what I find out is, per accident, that Java is one of the best programming languages for LLMs. but to generate code. And now you can ask why. I mean, how it's possible. By the way, what you did with Claude is this very, what, the Brock AI. So,
yes.
Is, they go with the direction, and they already support different models for different tasks. So you can select, you know, ChatGPT for review and for architect. Yeah. So
I've invited him, by the way.
Alice
is, he's coming.
Yeah, perfect. He's really great. And you should try, give a shot. Very similar to Claude code. So if you think about this. So Java is type safe, which is already good because there is more information in the context. But I don't know whether you know, but for years, maybe it was at the beginnings of 2000, I wrote some books about my ideas how to structure applications. The problem is there are too many of my ideas, and I always had too much to explain in every large project why I use this naming and not different naming, right? So, and then I replaced all my ideas with standards. So there is a boundary control entity, BCE, ECB pattern, the oldest one, and you know there are icons on available in robustness diagrams, UML, and whatever. And then you also know I like still MicroProfile in Jakarta E. So, and I also like Quarkus, and now I like you know JSRs and JEPs. And if you think about this, whatever I told you is publicly available.
Mm-hmm.
What I also have, 2,000 of my articles on my blog were always available.
Mm-hmm. So it's all indexed basically by these elements. Yeah.
And the cool story is, without doing anything, you can create a Quarkus BCE application based on MicroProfile.
Yeah.
And that all will create is 80%, you know, what I do show on DevOps conferences 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And what I'm doing right now is Claude Code or other tools. And I have maybe 200, 300 rules. You say, okay, not that way. You know, too many tests. Create such a test.
Yeah.
And now with these rules, it is almost perfect.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing is I think what the future could be is for enterprise projects that you use LLMs to generate code, which is understandable for humans and LLMs.
Mm-hmm.
Another finding is, so I structure my code by business domain names.
Mm-hmm.
If you just do that and open that with Claude Code, with the context alone, it already knows what's going on.
Yeah.
But if you are structure, you know, the applications, like, I don't know, service and foundation and models, no one knows what it means.
Yeah.
And with the LLMs, I even generate more stuff, for instance, package info in Java. So if you put it to the packages with domain, It is more understandable for humans, and you get better results with Claude Code.
Yeah.
So, and another thing, a side note, so if you consider Quarkus, for instance, and you go to Quarkus tutorials, they show you everything, you know. You can have JDBC, JPA, and the Quarkus persistence, or you can have JAX or as reactive, and REST Easy, and plain HTTP, whatever. And if you start as a developer, you are overwhelmed because it's okay, which of 10 different possibilities is the best one?
Yeah.
And LLMs are confused as well. But if you tell LLM, use a MicroProfile JAX-RS, so there is only one path. It means you know all, there is no hallucination or less hallucination, or in my case, there was no hallucination so far, but I'm sure if you formulate, you know, the prompt differently, because then using Quarkus, but from the standard, it is clearly defined, you know, how it should look like, and you get better results. I did similar experience, not even with Java, with web components. So I built my application with web components. And if you just provide the context, only use information from Mozilla Developer Network, there's everything described. It generates beautiful code without any external dependencies.
Yeah, yeah.
So we built already applications with web components. They look perfect without any external dependencies.
Yeah.
And what I'm doing right now, I'm creating a website actually for more or less LLMs with all the rules. I'm not done yet because the rules are, you know, this is the, I have several hundreds rules, but the rules are like, you know, every JAX-RS endpoint has to be end-to-end tested. So that's the first one. Or never test trivial stuff. No, getters and setters not allowed. Only Java doc, you know, with intentions and back. So like, you know, stuff what I usually tell at conferences. So I captured this in rules for LLMs, and the results are stunning. But you still have to know what you are doing, right? You say create new component, And what the next thing is, Stefan, the vocabulary, right? Because if you say create a boundary, it knows what boundary is because it's defined, you know, in X books. If I say create a business component, it knows, okay, Java domain package with, it is like, I don't know, conference speakers or whatever. And this is actually really interesting. And with, I don't know whether you're aware of Cairo. With that,
they're going to be present at DevOx Belgium. There's going to be talk about that.
Very good. So because with that, it's even a step further, because with this spec and with the, you can generate very easily, I'm from enterprise space, applications which looks really to the point, lean Java code, Java 21, you know, no indirections. And I think this is the maybe future for the next 2 to 5 years. Who knows what happens afterwards? But you can absolutely build maintainable applications.
I agree. But what is a bit dual in the sense that we as senior and experienced developers can actually guide it in the right direction. But I think as a junior developer, if you don't have that experience and you're just doing vibe coding and you don't know which guardrails need to be enforced, you will end up after 2 weeks with a spaghetti code, which is 90% working, but 10% is just above a junior's head. And that's what I'm starting to hear more and more is that, you know, well, first of all, a lot of people who are now at university or in high school, they are like demotivated because they go like, is there still a future in development? Mm-hmm. So we might have less juniors joining this field. And how can they become a senior developer if companies can be so much more productive with just one expert developer? I mean,
I think if you are a motivated junior, golden times, because you can learn faster than ever.
Yes,
because
I agree.
What you only have to do is to ask good questions all the time. Yes. And if something generates the code, what you have to do to learn, always ask why you did it. Explain why you did it. And I didn't understand. Do it again. And then in the shortest amount of time, you become a semi-expert maybe in this direction. But if you are lazy, forget it.
Yeah.
So I would say if you are motivated junior, golden times, junior who would like, you know, to have lots of vacations and just earn lots of money without any learning, forget it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree. I mean, the beauty is that we have now this universal tutor where you can ask the most stupidest questions, but you will get good answers. And it's like you said, I mean, if you're motivated and you are willing to ask and go the extra mile, you can do amazing things. I mean, like just me, I mean, I don't like doing CSS. You know, you have to do it if you want to have a nice design. Mm-hmm. I mean, often, you know, the UI from the backend developer looks awful, but now you can create these beautiful designs, beautiful web interfaces without even looking at the CSS, because I don't care. I just look at the result, and if it's responsive and it works on 4 different browsers, I'm happy, right?
You are not too excited what I told you, but do you remember the MDA, model-driven architecture?
Yeah.
But what it was, there was a platform-independent model, and they had a concept. You draw in UML, let's say, something, you know, a class with the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now this, the boundary concept becomes a rule in Brock, Claude, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use the vocabulary, you get like macro expansion on steroids with LLMs.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So if you use the words, you can be very efficient and say, generate a new boundary which accesses the database, and it already knows what to do. And you look at the code, it's like, this is perfect and this is fun. Because you would write the code anyway, you know? And then you provide some tweaks and go ahead. So this, I think, right now is golden. And this is the what we try to do in projects. And for vibe coding, I would say what I understand in vibe coding is what it actually means. If without any knowledge, you could say, okay, generate me something, but I don't believe in it because there is not enough information in the prompt. You know,
Exactly. That's why I'm saying it's more spec to code.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see these initiatives where you really need to think about the specification of a feature, for example.
Yeah.
And you really do a bit of analysis with the help of LLMs, etc., to create these documents. You make sure that the document stays in sync with the changes that are applied to the code. And there you're starting to see some huge opportunities for different companies which are jumping on that. And then you have also code to spec, Mm-hmm. Because if it's an existing project, you can do the reverse as well. Mm-hmm. And this is completely different. And the other thing I see also a huge difference compared to our last talk is the RAG, the retrieval augmented generation, is that RAG, in my opinion, is it's not doing any vector databases anymore. It's basically doing file system RAG. Mm-hmm. It's using these rip grep and find and so on, where it basically is doing a search on your file systems project based on certain naming and synonyms, mm-hmm. and it creates a context based on just searching through your directory structure.
My impression is also that the RAG get a little bit replaced with MCP, right? They are similar.
Yes.
Because with MCP with tools, the tools can pick whatever they like. And this is an overlap. But I ask some people, you know, there's no overlap. But for me, it's absolutely. Because, you know, with RAG, you are accessing your own database. And with MCP, you are accessing whatever you like via tools. You can be database, it can be file, whatever, right?
Yeah, but I even developed an MCP file system project in Java. But it's basically an MCP frontend, which is just your REST interface, to a file system Java logic, mm-hmm. which basically looks through your directory. Mm-hmm. And then any tool, if it's MCP compliant, can just be hooked into, you know, the LLM frontend or chat client. And I mean, that works for a project like even the mobile app now is already becoming substantial. But even the CFP, the Call for Papers app, which is 1.4 million lines of code, the file system RAG, as I like to call it, it works beautifully. If you have a bug and you can pinpoint it, it will find its way and it will know the relationships of the different classes and fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also did. But I implemented an MCP server without dependencies just for fun. And but it was not a tool. I used resources. So I exposed, you know, the file system as a resource, read-only. And MCP as well, multiple MCPs. One tool was fun, which accesses the JSON behind the podcast. So I can ask questions, who was, you know, the latest guest and so forth. So lots of fun. And this was almost nothing to do. And with RAG, it would be a lot harder. I don't even have a database. I only parsed my JSON file, which contains all the episodes. And this is enough for the LLM. So with Flow Desktop, I can ask, you know, when Stefan was on dinner, get a proper answer. I see that it actually calls the my tool, and I see, you know, the parameters and the return values, and immediately get, okay, is it okay or not?
Uh-huh. Yeah, nice. Yeah, I don't know. But the thing is, like, every weekend when it's raining, not even when it's raining, like, I don't know what to do, I go like, okay, what project do I want to do? And I go, last weekend I did a WordPress plugin in PHP for the basketball team, which I'm a big supporter and my son plays there. And I just said I had developed my own PHP to show the scores, etc., but using backend CSS as a backend developer. So I just revisited that and said to Claude, okay, look at the code, make it better, but make it really a professional UI. Mm-hmm. And within an hour, I had just a beautiful professional widgets that I could plug into WordPress, mm-hmm. which looked amazing. I could never do that as a non-designer. Mm-hmm. And so there's, and then I'm going like, okay, we have a Facebook timeline on the web. Okay, let's build a new plugin doing Facebook OAuth, get the token. And so I call it the renaissance of development, because now we can find, I'm a very creative person, but I sometimes, you know, just setting up a POM, a Maven POM, could already break your weekend because you could just fall over a certain setting and you couldn't figure it out. But now you can have an idea and it will already bootstrap a full project for you, and you can be productive and have a result in less than an hour. So I'm just getting much more enjoyment and pleasure by doing development between quotes, because I'm basically prompting and it's generating me the code. And what
happens in my case, so sometimes, you know, before LLMs, I created something Java hack together, and this was basically in folder. And I can say, now let's make it a little bit more professional. Mm-hmm. And then you can say, okay, I need some more tests, maybe a README or whatever. And then I get a nicer package with the help of LLMs to help me to polish the code, you know, to finish the code, and maybe it's open source it sometimes even. And what I wouldn't do a few years ago because it was no time. I can say, no, create a README. Oh, no, not that README.
Yeah, exactly.
What I need. Yeah, exactly. And then a few years ago, it was too boring. But back to beauty, what I really like is the DevOps background, you know, with the robot and
AI, of course, right?
Yeah, but how you did it?
So, well, I did not personally do it. We have a guy from France. So DevOps France found a person, a designer, designed their WordPress website. But he completely, his name is also Stefan, but with an E at the back. And he really jumped on the AI design and Midjourney and all these tools. And so he's really specialized himself in this. And so, yeah, you basically have a chat with him, and I'm telling him, like, okay, it's Java AI agents, Blade Runner, Dune, Matrix. So you give him some pointers, and then he creates all different visuals. And then I basically, it's on Miro. So I go to Miro, and then I say, okay, I want to follow that style. And then he creates prompts, but the prompts are like, one A4 paper long. So it's a really long prompt to set the theme, the style, the atmosphere, whatever. And then he uses that to create consistent images. And that's basically, you know, what he then produces on the website. But what he also does is that he then creates videos.
This is what I saw. The video was like, no, the robot moving, but right now there is no video. It's the rise of agents.
Yeah, if you scroll down, you will see I've actually created my own video yesterday for fun, and I've published it on the Belgium website, that's one I did.
Oh, yeah, I see the video. This is one with the robot and woman, and one I saw earlier, like the robot moving through a hall or something like this, but this was a few weeks.
Yeah, I replaced it yesterday with one that I did, because what I actually did, Grok from Twitter or XAI, they just released Grok Imagen, and you get now a free trial. And so I took the pictures from Miro, I gave it to Grok, and Grok creates 8 seconds of every image. And so, but what you can do is that the last frame of the last 8 seconds, you can use that for the next.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so I just was playing around, like in less than an hour, I had a cool animation. I do have sounds, but I didn't want to publish the sound on the website because it's very annoying for people who see that at work. But it's like, bloody hell. I mean, Hollywood is, they really need to. I mean, it's disruptive, right? I mean, they will need to do a control alt delete as well on how they create videos and.
But
movies.
This is the same as for us developers, right?
Oh yeah,
Like the people like Hans Zimmer and all the Hollywood, specialists. They will use prompts to generate art, and the lazy people or lazy, not that interested, maybe they will generate something which is generic. Because if you do nothing, you get an average stuff. You know.
Yes.
It costs a lot of time to do something special. With software, and I'm pretty sure with video even more.
Yeah, agreed. No, I agree. But it opens up the door, like, you know, in the past, it cost us 10,000 euros to create a nice promo video because you had a whole team. You know, I remember, like, we had once Do-It, where we had, it was actually a nephew of mine who holds a computer almost naked. And that was the theme for DevOps Belgium. But it was a complete production house, you know, with a full day of shooting and special effects, etc. Now you can just do it in 1 hour for a $10 subscription. So it opens up.
Yeah, but you should know, you should be interested, no? This is why you can do this, because you know how. But if you just go to Midjourney or to others, you get mediocre results. So sometimes I need, 20 pictures until something happens. And the last one took me 1 minute, but you really have to know how to ask, you know?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it's always like that. I mean, if you're motivated and you are willing to spend the time to learn it and to perfect it, you know, there's golden opportunities. Seriously. I mean, there's so many new opportunities that you can now realize, which I personally couldn't do because I'm an average developer and I needed other people to help me to get the job done. But these days I feel more empowered and I can actually really do things which 1 year ago were impossible.
You remember in Midjourney at the beginning I was stunned that that in the prompts there was like, you know, generate image which looks like Nikon 7 or something, right? Or Canon 5D or whatever. It's like, why, how it works? And if you think about this, it's normal, because what Midjourney did, you know, they scanned all the images, and in the metadata there were the cameras.
Exactly.
And I say, okay, then I'm okay. But if you know, you just get this understanding and you say, okay, what else is in the metadata image? And then you can be really creative. And this is why you still will have to understand, you know, how this entire thing is working because otherwise you go nowhere, right? It's not like it is. It's like the Clippy from Word. You know, you can say correct something, but it will never write for you some a book.
Yeah, yes, to a certain extent. But going back to CSS, I really don't care how the CSS looks, as long as it looks good and it's responsive and it works on all the browsers. I don't have to look at CSS anymore.
But for instance, I also do CSS. But in CSS, if you do something which has to be maintainable, so if I look at the CSS, it is very important to me that all the colors are as property, you know, in the header.
Yes, for instance.
To know it, otherwise it's mess. If you do this...
That's a clear point. But because like for the mobile app, I said we need to support the dark and a light theme.
Yeah.
And the only way to achieve that is with variables. So you're right. You already... You do need to know already a bit of the basics to guide it.
For instance, components, if you know, you can say create shadow DOM and then expose all the variable properties. And this is cool because back then was lots of work. Mm. But now LLM can generate all the properties for you. So you can, this is the same story as in Java. You can go farther without any external dependencies, you know, with LLMs because they generate for you the plumbing. And regarding the external libraries and dependencies, for you that matters less maybe because you know you are the master of DevOps and you are pushing whenever you like. But in enterprises, it is a different situation because the project is released and the company leaves and they forget about that.
Yeah.
And then all the dependencies, additional risk, you know, you have to maintain them. Other company takes over after years and it doesn't work because the dependency is dead.
That's true.
And with that, with LLMs, if you can write code without any dependencies, companies become interested and say, hey, this is a new age because we only publish stuff if we really have to. If your web app, you know, is only depending on browser APIs, and there is no React, no Angular, nothing. There is no build process, no build step. It's interesting. And Java is the same. If you just use Java SE, for instance, what can happen, right?
That's definitely true. I mean, I have I'm lucky that I can start with greenfield projects and I can decide whatever I want to do. So it's much more fun as well for me then. But you're definitely right. Yeah. The other thing I was really surprised last weekend. I've built this plugin DevOps Genie for IntelliJ products. Mm-hmm. Last weekend, we passed 30,000 downloads. 30,000 downloads. I was like, what? And so like August, I mean, we're not even finished. It's almost already the top downloaded month of the plugin. And I was like, I'm personally not using it anymore because I'm using Claude Code, which is the CLI versions. I find it very... you know, productive, and I don't even go into the IDE anymore unless I want to see what changes were made in from a Git perspective. But it seems like there's still a lot of people who are limited in what they can use from a company perspective, privacy, for example.
And this come even I'm even surprised it's only 40,000. For instance, what happens to me frequently, Claude Code is really a way to go now right now. But for instance, you can switch to AWS Bedrock, which some companies say, okay, it's cool, we're cool with that. But other companies, they have own API gateways.
Yeah.
So, and you cannot use then Claude Code, but your solution, you can still use. Yeah. And IntelliJ is huge in enterprise development.
Yes.
So I would say, I'm just surprised that, I would say it will be more and more because large companies are doing, they are locking down all the LLMs because they're afraid of it. Yeah. And they provide their own proprietary solution. But all the IDEs need a standard API. They cannot work with proprietary company solutions. And I would say it will be even more popular next year.
Yeah, it looks like it. I was really surprised because, well, like I said, I wasn't using it even myself anymore. And then I saw like, what? 30,000 downloads? So what I'll do is that after DevOps Belgium and I have a bit of downtime, I will start focusing on it a bit more. And because I introduced MCP support into the plugin early this year, but I've not upgraded, for example, to LangChain, the latest version anymore. So, I need to... And we do have a bit of contributors. There's some people, even a guy from the Netherlands, Gunther, who's doing a deep dive on how to use DevOps Genie within his IntelliJ environment. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a bit of traction. But the problem always with these open source projects, you would expect that there would be more people contributing, etc. And I'm always a bit disappointed in what you really get as a contribution. Even if there's still, I think we have 14 people who have at least donated some time, which I really appreciate and I'm thankful for. But yeah, it looks like I still need to drive it forward.
The contribution in open source is also problematic, because if I do something in open source, I have a clear vision how it should be. Mm. And if you get a contribution, it's not always that.
Yes, but
the question is, what do you do now, right?
Yeah,
That's the problem. So I'm actually happy that actually what I often do, I keep my open source project private first until it's almost done, and then open source it. And the contributions are now just shallow one. And why I do open source at all, just for convenience. You know, it's on GitHub. I can clone it. I can push it. It's not like I expect something, or I have. It's a really a nice backup way. And and all the infrastructure is also there with README and sometimes, you know, I forgot about a project on my hard disk, lots of them, but on GitHub it's harder to forget. I have also have to delete some. It's almost over 100 repositories right now, I guess. But
But the problem I also have with the open source is that I know there's a few banks who are using DevOps Genie, and then you all of a sudden you get requests, but it's feature requests, and they're just assuming. You know, for me it's a hobby project, right? I do this on the side. It's free, open source, but then they all of a sudden they expect that you'd give them support and you implement the feature and go like.
So you have to have policy, and then you, and I will set a price. You know, you get a feature. Yeah, you have to do this. I did it recently with the podcast. The problem with the podcast was I get, you know, no kidding, maybe several times a week, you know, requests. We have a manager who would like be on your podcast, and I read that. Okay, this is not related to Java. Maybe a little bit Kubernetes, and I say okay. If you really will come to, it has to be Java first. And I created the guideline. This is very new on the podcast. If you go how to be on the podcast, or it is going to be sponsored one, but I would say this is a sponsored episode.
Okay.
But only then you cannot, you know, buy my opinion, only, you know, my time. But I will ask you with the same podcast as with you, but about Kubernetes or whatever you like. And and this is now cool, because if I get such a request, I send the link back, and you know, I save time. Back then I have to, you know, read the email. And maybe you can say, okay, if you really would like to have the feature, you have to pay me a price, which is interesting for you. And you can even and then it's clear, you know?
Yeah, sure. I could, but that's not my motivation.
But if not motivation, then donate it, you know. But if there is a price, this is the problem with spam, you know. We only have spam because email is free. If email will cost, you know, 10 cents, this is why. And it's okay. The price, if you pay it, it goes to the other contributors, maybe, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, like
this. So if you say, I am not interested in also understanding, then donate it back to the...
Well, the advantage I did get out of it is that one, you know about all the APIs and you understand the respect, what it can do, etc. So for me, it's more from the intellectual point of view that I want to know what works, what doesn't, etc. Mm-hmm. And that also then dictates a bit why I select certain speakers or topics for the event. That's the main reason. And the other nice side effect is that sometimes I do get invited by a company and saying like, hey, do you want to talk about this for an hour? And that's where I get fun of it, because the feedback you get from people, again, inspires you to do other certain things, etc. Yeah. And that's really my motivation, to be honest. But anyway, but I think local LLMs, and you know, if you look at Qwencoder 2.5 and the 3.0 that's going to come up, etc., all these local, and even, you know, OpenAI who released an open source, they are becoming really powerful. And they just run on your machine very fast, actually.
Yeah, I think it's
especially on Mac.
Yeah, and this is going to be even better. Tornado VM will support Metal on Mac in December.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, exactly. And this has been really interesting, because it opens the door for local inference in enterprises.
Yes.
Because
that's going to be huge. I mean, they contacted me as well when they released it. I compared it with the Graal VM inference one. And the Graal VM was still faster than the Tornado one on Mac because, well, they don't yet support the Metal one.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully that's definitely going to be a feeding ground for Babylon, where we have Paul Sandoz from the Oracle team talking about Java on AI and on GPU. So just having those people in the same room, you know, that's going to be just very interesting. Really looking forward to that.
And Paul Sandoz is also involved in another JDK project. So you're aware of it?
I know.
Jason.
Oh, yeah, true, of course.
He was the original, we get the Jason. I'm really excited about that.
Of course. Yes. Yeah, and so we have even Rod Johnson doing a keynote, the Spring founder. Mm-hmm. He started a new pet project called Embabel, which is basically Java. It's a Java framework for building AI agents.
Cool.
So he's doing a keynote on Wednesday and a talk as well, and even a hands-on lab on Embabel. And then we have the Quarkus team basically releasing the AI agents for LangChain4j. So timing-wise, you know, it really fits nicely. We really have the AI agents players at
and
Evox
Brock,
Belgium.
Also agent.
And Brock, yes.
Open source. This is crazy.
Yeah, he's also confirmed and coming over. It's the first time he's speaking at DevOps Belgium, so I'm really looking forward to see him.
Yeah, and he's actually a great guy and great speaker, so he's really knowledgeable, so interesting.
Yeah,
so
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a really nice week of networking and brainstorming and hopefully getting some new feature ideas for DevOps Genie as well when I have, again, a bit of more time. Mm-hmm. Should be good.
Perfect. So where people can find you on the internet?
Well, I'm trying to be more active on Blue Sky. So that's stefanjansen.be or .be. But I do see that I still get more feedback on Twitter. So I still use Twitter as well. So I publish them on both. So on Twitter, it's Stefan007 from James Bond. Mm-hmm. Those are the two channels that I use. I use LinkedIn as well. But yeah, those are the three channels if you want to reach out to me or ping me. Or if you have a pull request, then on GitHub is always a good place to find me as well.
Perfect. So thank you, and see you at DevOps.
I'll see you in DevOps, Adam. Thanks for the podcast.
Bye.
Bye.